Hello, welcome once again to the Bird and the Beard, episode 11. And the Beard, with me as always, is the Bird.
Hey, I'm back again. It's good for another show. We made it past the Big Ten, so I've got to keep going now. It's going to start feeling like hard work. No, not really, of course not.
So how's things, girl? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've had a day off today and I've got a day off tomorrow, so I'm just spending as much time on my backside as physically possible. And it's been good, yeah. My mum bought me sushi today, so it was a nice treat. And I've just been watching a lot of TV shows and stuff on Netflix.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta do some watching myself for other various shows, you know. You get too tied up doing stuff, but that's just the story of someone with no life, and you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's good though. I mean, you know, it's right. I'd rather be busy having to watch a load of films and talk about them and do something I love than having to be busy, I don't know, doing something really, really. I'm trying to think of something really unpleasant, like peeling people's eyeballs or something. I don't know. But you know what I mean.
I know. I think I know what you mean. I don't know. But so what have you been watching lately that's been any good, girl?
I just finished, well, just caught up with Haven. It's a TV show that's on Netflix. Season 5's just started, so I haven't watched that one yet because I think only the first episode's out. It's based on Stephen King book, The Colorado Kid, and it's sort of Buffy, supernatural style, you know, weird abilities and talents meets your average sort of detective whodunit show. So it stars, well, it features a character, Audrey, who goes to the town of Haven, where a lot of people have strange abilities that come about. They're called the Troubles. Dun, dun, dun. And she tries to sort of sort things out and make things normal and, you know, stop everyone from dying, which happens quite a lot. So, yeah, it was a bit of hit. It's just ridiculous, but it's mostly quite good. I was pleasantly surprised by it because Netflix was sort of recommending all of these TV shows that I should watch, and the poster for all of them was some skinny blonde woman surrounded by a group of men. And I was like, no, 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 no. They all look exactly the same. I don't want to watch any of these. But then I started watching this and, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by the characters and the writing and, you know, she's not just a dumb blonde or just a pretty blonde or whatever. And it's actually quite interesting. So if you have Netflix or if it's on TV or whatever, I would recommend giving Haven a watch, even though it is a sci-fi original series, which did worry me for a while. But it's not the usual trash that sci-fi put out, to be perfectly honest. And at the minute I'm watching the rest of Criminal Minds because they've just added the rest of the seasons onto Netflix. So I'm watching that at the moment.
Yeah, my mother loves that show, Criminal Minds. She don't leave it alone. It chews up our DVR currently at the moment, and she loves that show.
I like it. It's a good show.
I love me some Joe Montana. I just don't. I can't get down with those cop shows. You know, it's. There's so many of them, you know?
There are. I do quite like them. I think my mum watches pretty much all of them, so I sort of grew up on them. So I think there's a familiarity to them. And, you know, I'm one of those people that really likes getting, you know, these weird insights into serial killers and all that. I love that stuff. I know it's so cheesy and ridiculous, but I do. I love learning about all that sort of thing. I like to think it makes me more intelligent.
You like what you like, you know? It's out there. Give it a watch, you know. It's good stuff. Anything else of thought?
I'm sure there was something else, and I can't remember what it was. I'm sure there was something in between Haven and Criminal Minds, but I've forgotten what it was now. Okay. But it obviously wasn't that good, otherwise I would have remembered.
Yeah.
So, what about you? What have you been watching?
I watched two films for the commentary show, which were probably our best shows ever because they were just so much fun to watch with the group and to get that kind of reaction that you'd want out of those two movies. One of which was Peter Jackson's gore slugfest, Dead Alive, or Brain Dead as you guys know it in the UK,
mm-hmm.
which is just a terrific movie. You know, I can't explain how terrific movie it is. But the guy's mother gets bitten by a Sumatran rat monkey, and she becomes zombified. And ooh, that movie's delicious. I love that movie.
Delicious, nice description. Descriptive word there. It's quite apt.
It is a great horror film and great funny, great comedy, great all around film is awesome. And we had a great time watching that movie together. And the next night actually was we watched Troll 2 for the commentary show, and that was a fun thing because Boss Butcher came on and Hugh and his wife came on and they never seen it before, and it was really fun to watch with somebody who'd never seen it before. It's just not to know what they're going to expect. Because the first time I asked Hugh, like, did she watch the movie, Hugh? She goes, well, no. Like, don't let her watch it. Don't let her watch it. You know? I want to get a genuine reaction out of her just to see what's going to happen, you know?
I can't even remember how I came across Troll 2. I found it at the same time as I watched The Room, which I think they do sort of go in hand as two of the worst movies ever. So I watched those a couple of years ago. But I know a couple of the actors from Troll 2, and they are absolutely lovely people. So we can forgive them.
Awesome.
I watched Troll 1 as well. Have you seen the first one?
I've seen the first one, yeah, long ago. Yeah. When I was a little shorty, I've seen Troll 1.
I quite enjoyed that one as well, actually.
That's good, yeah. It's just nothing like Troll 2, but it's good.
No, it isn't, with the magic ring. But Troll 1 actually has trolls in, which is nice.
Yeah, played by Phil Fondacaro is the main troll, and I love little people. You know, he's the little person inside that troll suit and not walking very fast, but evil nonetheless, you know?
Oh, of course. I mean, Michael Myers doesn't walk very fast.
It's like the biggest threatening thing in Troll 2 is, watch us advance. There's one time where the troll throws a spear at the guy, and he hits him in the shoulder with oh, this is inconvenient, and now I can't walk, you know. And
I'm going to have to rewatch that. I haven't seen it in a while.
What a movie, definitely. I've been catching up with Sons of Anarchy because I missed, like, the whole last season. So the new season started this past Tuesday, so I'm trying to play catch up with that, and I'm going to get that happening.
The new American Horror Story is going to come out in a couple of months, I believe. Not a fan?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm a novice fan. I don't love it like people love it, but I can see the appeal, you know?
No, I don't love it like people love it either. I've seen all of it. I think I like the second series.
I don't like the first series at all.
No, the first one's awful.
I thought it was boring and stupid, and people defended.
Oh, I got about 10 episodes in, and I still didn't know what the hell was going on
I didn't finish it. I wasn't interested. I literally got about, like, one episode left. I was like, nope, I'm done, you know?
I forced myself to watch it all.
It's like, you think I'd be invested after I watched, like, most of the series, but, you know, like, nope, this is going nowhere, and I don't want to waste another hour of my time.
It took a lot of effort. I seem to recall I got to about episode 4 or 5, and I still hadn't got a clue what was going on, so I gave up for a while, and then I had to go back to it. Well, I have seen it all now.
I did like Dennis O'Hara in that series. That's a shining part of that series. And he's good in that first season. And that was something, you know.
I think the second season's my favorite, set in the mental asylum. Mm-hmm. It's messed up and it's horrible, but it's really good.
Yeah.
The third one I prefer it to the first series, obviously, but it's not. I don't know. Everyone else seems to like it more than me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the acting is amazing. I love the new cast members. Angela Bassett is fantastic.
Oh, she's great.
Kathy Bates is brilliant, as always. You know, Emma Roberts is good as well.
The funny thing about these big actors who are big now, I would talk to them. Like, somebody I follow these autograph groups on Facebook, and they met all these Game of Thrones peoples in the airport, and one of them was Charles Dance. And I was like, I could never be Charles Band in an airport. Let me tell you why. I'd be too tempted to say, my dear sweet brother Nomsi from The Golden Child. I'd be too tempted to say it because, you know, he was that guy in The Golden Child, and I love 80s camp with a passion. He was great in it. He's a great bad guy, and
Yeah, he is. He does evil well, Charles Dance. I think I know him best from Alien, though, actually. Or possibly Jam in Jerusalem.
Alien 3 he was in, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Angela Bassett. You were the bomb in Critters 4. Let me tell you, you were great in that movie. She was, too. You know, but
wow.
I love Critters 4. If you're an Alien fan, you should watch Critters 4 because it's pretty much the same movie with like, really shitty effects and little furry things running around instead of a awesome-looking Geiger-inspired xenomorph killing people.
I think I've seen Critters 3 and possibly Critters 1.
Yeah, Critters 2 is great because Critters 2 has an attack on the Easter Bunny that's quite hilarious.
Wow. I think one of them was in, like, an apartment, like a block of flats.
Yeah, it's 3. With little Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I've seen that one. It was on the Horror Channel at like 4 o'clock in the morning, so...
Okay. Besides that, I forgot to mention these last time I was on the show, but I watched Orca, the killer whale, for Graveshift Radio.
Oh, God, I watched about 2 seconds of that and switched it off.
It's good. It's like Jaws meets Moby Dick. It's not a bad movie.
Okay, I'll give it a proper go.
And I watched Cannibal Holocaust for Graveshift Radio. Have you seen Cannibal Holocaust?
I haven't, no.
No, it's one of those things where you should watch once and then you could tell me your opinion, because I had good and wishy-washy feelings about that movie, because there's some stuff that happens that should not be enjoyed by anybody, but the movie's beloved by everybody, and I can see from the grindhouse factor of it. But when a woman dies in the worst possible way, and I'm not going to tell you what it is till you watch the movie, you can tell me, oh, why didn't you tell me what it was? Because I'm not going to tell you what it is, because you got to watch the movie. But I was like, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see him kill a turtle and then, you know, do this bad stuff. And that, no, it's just not for me. But
okay.
It's just like, you know, it's really strange thing, you know, where basically white folks go into the jungle. White folks fuck with the natives, and then the white folks get killed by the natives in the worst possible way, you know.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. It does have a bit of a reputation, and I don't know whether I want to see it or not, to be honest, but I will watch it for you.
You know, watch it for me. Don't say I let you make you watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to, and then if I hate it, it's your fault.
Oh, the rape again! No, I wouldn't go there. But, yeah, besides that, not much else I can really remember. They dropped a whole bunch of stuff on Netflix, but I don't think I watched any of it. It's there. I rewatched the last season of The League because I watched the two newest episodes, and yeah, you catch it up and stuff. It's easy to do. Oh, I watched, I forget this now. You've heard of a show called Garfunkel and Oates?
No, I don't think so.
Watch Garfunkel and Oates, you'd enjoy it. It's they're a lady singing duo, comedy duo. It's kind of like Flight of the Conchords with vaginas. That's the best way I could describe it, you know.
Okay, that's a tagline and all.
They get in like awkward situations like those guys, but they're American, they're not from New Zealand, you know. And it's really entertaining, and I really laugh at it, and I have an autograph coming in the mail from them, so that's going to be pretty awesome to be hanging on my wall, you know. That's about it for me, though.
Oh, I watched From Dusk Till Dawn, the series. I can't remember if I told you that already, though.
No, you didn't.
That was a while ago. I can take it or leave it. Mostly, I just wanted to watch the film while I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Just the whole time going, that bit was in the film. I want to watch the film now.
Yes, I hear it takes like 3 or 4 episodes to get the titty twister, and then, you know, then it kind of goes off on its own thing, which I can respect, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like, they have a whole episode based on the scene in Benny's World of Liquor or whatever it's called. So, yeah, it does take a while to get there. And it does sort of, obviously, it looks into the characters more and things. And I sort of like where they took some of it. But there was no need for it. So I don't know. It was interesting. And apparently it's been renewed, green light for the second season. So people must have liked it. But I just spent the whole time going, this wasn't in the film and it doesn't need to be. This doesn't add anything to the film.
It's funny. People were complaining about this. But back like when I was little, we had these big movies come out. They were big, like comedies, that had no business to have a television show. Like, we had Uncle Buck, the series, back in the day.
Is that I did not know that. I've seen the film, of course. Wow.
Harry and the Hendersons, the series, was a thing. And that didn't need to happen either. Because I thought it ended where it needed to end. And, you know, that was it. There was more, and I'm sure we'll look into this, but especially the 70s were especially the dumbest. Happy Days had a cartoon. There's so many bad ones. You know, don't tell Willis that. Willis loves that shit.
Oh, dear.
It was fun when they came on Scooby-Doo, but that's about it, you know. Sonny and Cher, zoinks! I love that stupid stuff, because it's campy as hell, but, you know, when they do, like, have their own standalone stuff, you know?
I think it was just sort of the weird blend of, like, trying to be the film and then trying to be something completely different at the same time. Like, the actors they hired look like the original actors. Mm. They have scenes, you know, with exactly the same dialogue and such as the film. And then at the same time, they're also going, actually, we're going to do this. They're not even vampires anymore. They're these weird snake creatures from, like, Aztec times or something. I don't think they touched on that
with Satanico Pandemonium in the original movie, because she was kind of snake-like, you know? So it's not really a new thing. You know, they just kind of made it like that now. I haven't watched it. But remember, as bad as it is, it can't be as bad as Uncle Buck the series. So, you know.
Oh, no, I don't think it's bad. I watched the whole series, you know. It was interesting. It seemed unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, people, it's a moneymaker. You know, it got renewed, you know.
Like, they even had, like, this little dude. Well, not, he wasn't little, but younger. Danny Trejo lookalike for the bartender. Like, there was no need for that at all, but he looks like him.
Yeah.
You know, the lead, Seth Gecko, has, like, the George Clooney look. He's got the eyes, you know, like, what are they called, bedroom eyes or whatever. He looks quite... He does have that sort of similar look to George Clooney, you know? Which looks sort of tall and gangly and awkward like Quentin Tarantino. They do look like the actors. But
you would have to have the same kind of general look, you know, or else it wouldn't work.
Why?
Because it wouldn't work. You need to view those characters like the characters you know, like for the film that came out 20 years ago now, which is a film I wouldn't see with my father, of all people, who...
For a whole new generation of people who possibly haven't had this seen the film, and even if they had, it wouldn't matter if they looked like them or not. There's no, you know, point in the plot that says this person has to look like this. Because some ancient prophecy says so or anything like that. So there's no need for them to look like carbon copies of the actors.
Well, it's one of the things where they have to appeal to the fans. And that's a thing. Because you'd have to do that. And if you didn't appeal to the fans, especially in the fanboy, internet-fueled world of today, they might tar and feather you in the worst possible way.
I don't know. It doesn't need add anything to it by making them look like it. I couldn't care less what they look like, you know. The woman who plays Santanico is dreadful.
Oh, it's hard. You have to find, like, I don't even know who else you get to play the Salma Hayek part, but she's beautiful.
Even
20 years later, she's beautiful.
She is, but that's all she does in this series is pout.
Really?
Yeah, she like, some lines get completely lost because she's so busy trying to make her lips into this perfect shape that she can't speak properly. It's just, it's so bad.
It's funny, man, the way you did with the pouting thing. I love, there's that line she has in the movie where she's got her foot on Seth Gecko's chest and she's talking to him about, you know, making him her dog and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll name you Spot. And then she has that pouting look on her face. You know, she says Spot, and I can see it now, you know.
No, nothing against Sola. She was perfect, is it? Although, speaking of that scene, there was a really awkward bit because they copied the dance as well.
Oh, yeah?
Obviously, there's the bit where she pours the tequila or whatever it is down her leg and you know, Richie drinks it from her foot, and there's the weird Tarantino foot fetish thing going on. And then she sort of lifts her leg up and licks it off her own shin.
You see, it works when it's a Tarantino production. Mm-hmm. Because Tarantino is notoriously has a foot fetish.
Yeah.
You see it in all the movies, you know.
Uh-huh. Uma Thurman's your big toe.
Uma's ugly ass feet in close up, or that's the her dis man. That's what turns me off. Because they constantly show close-ups of Uma's feet in so many movies. Like, she has the ugliest feet on the planet, but she's beautiful, and I can't take the feet, you know? Not like my feet look like the fucking caveman's foot, but, you know, that's a man's foot, you know?
I have weirdly tiny feet. They're really small.
I'd imagine.
I wear children's shoes. I'm not exaggerating. I really do wear
children's shoes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
All right.
They're cheaper, though. Like, when I was in Spain, they were like, you can have these kids' shoes for $45, or you can have these adult ones that are exactly the same but a size bigger for $75. I was like, what should I pick?
Thank God for small feet.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, we'll roll right into our movies now after all this From Dusk Till Dawn discussion.
Yeah.
And we'll roll into, we did aviation theme pretty much, or like military theme, because not a lot of aviation going on in my movie. But we'll roll into my movie first, which is An Officer and a Gentleman from the early 80s, a film I've never seen before. So it's a special one because my grandmother loved it, and yeah, I never actually watched it before. It's from 82, so I was 1 year old when this movie came out, so...
I was minus 10.
You're minus 10. God, I feel like an old man every time we do a show, I swear. Every time I'm we sorry. Do a show. No, it ain't your fault. It ain't your fault I was born in a different decade.
It isn't my fault, man.
But, yeah, this stars Richard Gere as Zach Mayo. Mayonnaise, you know? I love what they call him, mayonnaise. Deborah Winger as Paula. David Keith, not Keith David, as Sid.
Oh my God, imagine if Keith David was in this.
David Keith, not Keith David. That would be an epic meeting if they made a movie together, let me tell you.
Yes, it would.
Robert Loggia, who I don't think you've seen enough in this movie. I think you should have seen more Loggia as Zach Mayo's daddy, Byron Mayo. Where else we got here? Lisa Eilbacher as Casey Seeger. Seeger, I love that girl too. She's pretty cool. And the man, the myth, Lou Gossett Jr., my chappy, as Sergeant Foley. He's pretty awesome.
Yes.
And a cast of characters I'll get into later. With a lot of bit actors in this movie that I didn't notice until I watched it today. Like, wow, I know a lot of these actors. And I'm going to talk about that during the review, really, pretty much.
Oh, that'll make a nice change. It's usually me doing that.
Yeah, usually, yeah. But, yeah, it's here's the cheap IMDb plot synopsis. A young man must complete his work at a Navy flight school to become an aviator with the help of a tough gunnery sergeant and his new girlfriend. It's kind of weak, but whatever. This movie was good to me. Like I said, my grandmother used to have it on VHS. She watched it lots, and I never sat and watched it because it wasn't my thing at the time. But as an adult, you start to realize you have a bucket list of films that you've never seen that you should have watched by now, and this is on that list. So what do you think about it?
Well, I lied. I said last week that I've never seen it before, which I thought was true. But then watching it, I realized that I have seen it before a long time ago. And I only, amazingly, I've somehow managed to block out all of the sex scenes, all of the nudity and the kissing, all of that. The only bits I remember are the fighting.
Yeah, there were some awkward sex scenes in this movie.
Oh, God, yeah. Sure. It certainly, you know, it sort of bills itself as very schmaltzy, romantic, you know, Richard Gere, you know, snogging various women and whatnot. And then it opens with this random naked gangbang with him and his dad.
I didn't know what to make of that opening scene.
Well, at first I assumed that the dad had brought these two women home and he just like woken up and been like, oh, dad's at it again. But then his dad was like, hey, did you like your present? And I was like, what? No. Oh, creepy.
She's like, oh, look, I'm so damaged. But guess what, dad? I'm going to the Navy now. Thanks for the present, dad. thanks for the Filipino whore, dad.
Yeah.
I didn't like sloppy seconds, but I was wrong. You know?
Thanks for showing me your penis, Dad.
That was a real Bonnie moment for your father and son.
That was beautiful.
Oh, that thing, that we're talking about this, I don't need that much Robert Loggia in this movie.
I realize what I missed without my dad growing up. I could have had this.
Oh, definitely, yes. That's like good Filipino horror to bond between father and daughter, too, so you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, but I like the way it was set up, you know, with that, though. Like, basically, he had nothing left to do but go prove something, maybe to his father, or just go try to make something of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a thing in this movie, him basically trying to prove that he can do it on his own. Whereas you had his friend Sid, played by the great David Keith, not Keith David. I'm going to call that from now on. What's your name? My name is David Keith, not Keith David. Because I'm sure he's had that problem all his career, you know.
Yes, especially when, like, if you look at a register and your name's written backwards, like Wood Emily would say Keith David.
It's like, look, I'm white, he's black. You see a difference here, you know, just a little bit, just in skin tone.
No, I don't see any difference at all. Mm-mm.
I have a massive chin. I'm David Keith, you know. It bounced a quarter off that chin, you know.
It is an impressive chin.
But yeah, he was like a legacy, pretty much. His father was a great Navy man, and he had something to live up to. And Richard Gere's father, Byron, played by Robert Loggia, was a real bastard, but he was a career Navy man too, you know. Because, you know, you go from port to port. If you're not married, that's a good thing. You know, you can have as many whores as you want to, you know.
A woman in every port.
Yeah. So he is kind of damaged from all that, from being moved around. And then, of course, his mom doing herself in at a young age. And then later something else happens that, you know, makes him want to quit being a Navy man. And, yeah, I like it. I like Lou Gossett Jr. I love Chappie. That's an ideal reference, but that's not his name with this movie. But, you know... I got to meet the man once, and I called him Chappie because I felt emotional because of it, because of Iron Eagle, you know, and he's just a badass motherfucker in this movie. He's throwing gay remarks at people. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but, you know, he just knows how to bring people's spirits down like you wouldn't believe, especially poor Seagar who couldn't get up the wall and, you know. And get a little motivation for your ass, you know. Oh, he is the epitome of badass, though. Even when he's not talking, when he has his world famous, he didn't say it, but you know, which one, when he does his martial arts training, which one of you guys think you guys can knock me down, basically?
Yeah.
And he busts up a poor young David Caruso, something awful, and oh man, I don't even know how you get away with that. Just like putting your whole massive hand around somebody's throat, and not letting go, you know. Like, come on, you can do it, you can do it. And then he saves his life later, which is, you know, he felt, you see the emotion come through, you know. And he was great. Who else? I see, like I said, I mentioned so many actors that you've seen in other things. Like Tony Plania, who's been a Latino actor in Hollywood for, I don't know, 30 years plus. That's been tons of stuff that you've probably seen him. He's the only Latino actor in this entire film.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been in tons of stuff, you know, either playing like your token Latino or like your dramatic Latino. Latino of the week, people, you know. Harold Sylvester, who played Griff on Married with Children. But apparently he did a lot early in his career. And I didn't know that because all I know him is from Griff from Married with Children. And no, ma'am, that was a lot of fun. I didn't see him. I noticed here in the credits that Victor French was in it, who was, of course, famously on Little House on the Prairie and in Highway to Heaven, you know. And I didn't see him in the movie. I might have missed something. But, you know, that was a thing in this movie. A lot of that guy actors in this movie, including David Keith, not Keith David. see, it's funny every time you say it. See?
It is. It's never going to not be funny.
But, yeah, I like, you know... how it becomes basically this loser, basically, with nothing, with no self-esteem, to this guy who basically, being whipped into shape by this lobby sergeant, you know, becomes a better man because of your helps, in a way, you know.
Sorry, I'm going to cough everywhere.
And that was the thing in that movie. She was an inspiration until he started becoming a dick to her and stuff like that. And
yeah.
But her friend, let's discuss her stupid friend who did my boy Sid all wrong, you know.
That was so weird.
She played with, in the ghetto, what we call a pussy trap. You know, she says that he's pregnant. She's pregnant, and just to basically make her stay with him, and then she wasn't pregnant, and then, yeah, something really bad happens to Sid after she says she wasn't pregnant, and he quits being in the Navy because of it, and because he wants to be a good man, and make an honest woman out of her, and all this good stuff, and she says she couldn't be with him if he wasn't an aviator, so he does something really bad to himself, and that's, that makes you sad, you know?
Yeah,
which
that
ironic,
was
which is ironic because right after this, I turned on my television and Top Gun was on. And it's right where the part where Goose dies. I was like, man, No, that's like too much irony right there, you know. the buddy in arms dying in a movie. That's your classic 80s movie.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other stuff you liked about the movie? You like anything else about the movie?
You've already mentioned it, but the sergeant's, like, just his presence in general was so good, you know, like all these faces he pulled, and especially the scene, you know, the opening bit where he sort of dresses them all down in a line. I mean, I don't know how they didn't fall about laughing when he was getting right up in their faces. It was just amazing. But he was really into that character. That was some solid acting right there. I really enjoyed that. I love the scene where they do the diving thing, you know, they're in this big rig that's set up like the seat they'll be in a plane in case they crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to escape it, obviously, before dying. You know, and the poor girl, she has been not the best at anything else, you know, just sort of scraping through. And then she gets to that bit and she's like, can we do it again? And I was like, yes! Come on, girl, you can do it. So yeah, that was a fun scene. I like the sort of the general camaraderie about it, you know. They start off as a group of strangers, and they, you know, it's cheesy, but it's always nice to watch a group of people going together through the tough times, and they really look out for each other, you know, despite being completely different, coming from different backgrounds and such. I like that Richard Gere's character Mayonnaise was a little bit of a spiff, you know. He was a getting someone on the outside just to polish the buckles and things, and then getting people to pay for them.
That was a good hustle, yeah.
That was a good system. Oh, it reminds me of school.
And he was going to get caught anyway. You knew he was going to get caught.
Oh, yeah, he was totally going to get caught.
Gunny's
but
too
he doesn't give in. He doesn't give in.
Gunny's too smart for all that, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I sort of went into this film expecting it to be very much, you know, oh, I love you forever, and to not enjoy it, because I'm not big on the romance films, to be honest. But, yeah, I did quite like it. My mum will kill me if I admit that I liked it, because she hates 80s movies. But, yeah, it was pretty good. What else was there? I guess just sort of the script and acting in general I find quite good. Like, the minor characters, like, when they start going, Rich and Deborah Winger start going through their weird iffy patch, you know, and there's that random bitch at the factory that's just like, yeah, well, this is what happens.
Well, that was her mother, I think, talking to her.
God, I was so ready to deck her.
Because there was the whole thing where her dad was a Navy man, and that he left them. And that was her experience, because she brought it up to him. And
was that her mom? Because who did they have dinner with then?
I think that was the mom working in the factory too. It seemed like one of those real Norma Rae situations where that was.
Because that was a different woman, I'm sure.
I don't know. It was really strange because it seemed like they are all. That was the thing to do on a Saturday night, is go bang an airman or something, you know? And
yeah. And the bodacious Tartars.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love the reference.
Although, they were not that big.
No, they were not that big, you know.
I was like, those are bodacious? Really? Really? Okay.
Yeah, they weren't that bodacious, though. But then again, you know, I see Anna Paquin's titties on True Blood. They're not very big, but they're perky. And that does something for me, you know.
Yeah, so, well, I mean,
maybe she had some Anna Paquin boobs going on that I didn't see, you know.
Yeah, well, they're all very slim, aren't they? So there's only a certain size you can get naturally when you're very, very skinny.
Or you'd fall down.
Yeah. Back pains and troubles and, oh, no, it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, I thought the ending was pretty fitting, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I respect you, you respect me, kind of thing between Pink Gunny and his his recruits,
mm-hmm.
and the end scene where he finally graduates and he goes, of course, the very famous scene at the end where he goes to pick her up in the factory, and you know, it's yes. like he's carrying across the trellis or some shit of the shitty factory, and like, I'm gonna take you all away from this. And then I think the worst part of this film is the very weak Jack Nietzsche score, and that's bad because he's a great composer.
Mm.
Because they use that "Love Lift Us Up Where We Belong" like throughout this whole film.
Oh yeah,
like I it know. Was like it thought it was a good idea. And I realized this is the '80s, so they have love themes for all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Footloose had "Almost Paradise," which you know, Kenny Loggins joint, king of the soundtrack '80s. You know, Top Gun, like I mentioned, had Berlin's "Take My Breath Away."
Yeah.
You know, and this film had that Joe Cocker song with the girl who I can't remember her name singing. You know, and that was the thing of this movie. They played it throughout the entire movie in an instrumental sense, and it just annoyed the piss out of me.
Yeah, until the end when they finally had lyrics.
It's finally had lyrics.
And I spent the whole film going, "Why is this making me sing this song?" And then they sang it, and I was like, "Oh, it is that song. Okay, I'm not crazy."
So if I had to pick a weak point of the film, it's that blonde bitch, and then that thing right there. Because that blonde bitch can go fucking die somewhere, especially at the end where she's clapping. It's like, "Yeah, he come back for you. Fuck you, bitch. You killed the guy. You know, and you fucking, ooh, you know."
Yeah. I found that storyline weird. I mean,
you made that man hang himself in the fucking bathroom because you're a fucking bitch, you know?
It was strange because she didn't seem like that. And then she did it, but it just didn't... I don't know. I didn't buy it completely. I don't know if it was a scene was cut or if it was the way it was written or what, but there's something about that whole plotline that I just didn't buy.
I want to see the deleted scene where Richard Gere grabs her by her blonde head and just sits her ass like, "No. No, you're not part of the slow clap, okay?"
That's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray.
You don't deserve the slow clap. You sit down. somebody animate that, please. I want to see that. Just because.
That'll be amazing.
Oh, yeah, besides that, I got not much else to say about the movie. We talked it up pretty good.
Mm. Well, you did most of the talking, I think, because you knew a lot of the actors better than me. Not a good thing. Not a bad thing, even.
They're American actors, you know.
I know. I don't listen to you Yanks.
You got anything else you want to say about it, girl?
No, I think we've pretty much been through the whole thing. Like I say, I enjoyed it more than I was expecting to. And it's not nearly as schmaltzy as the poster makes it out to be. So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I prefer Private Benjamin, though.
Yeah, it's very good, Private Benjamin. It's great 80s schlock.
Yes.
In closing, I would not like to take a nut shot from Louis Gossett Jr. because it would hurt like a motherfucker.
Oh, my God.
Because he just laid him out with one kick to the balls, and, you know.
That was a kick and a half, though. Jesus Christ. I'm surprised they didn't pop out of his mouth.
He got both of them, I think. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that's my closing statement there for this movie, and I'm going to give my rating right now, which should be about an 8, a solid 8 for me.
I think
2 weak points of the film for me, it gives an 8, you know.
I think I'm going to go slightly lower in 7.5.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with it. I like the same sort of things as you that I have an issue with, and, you know, the weird, random, misogynistic moments, because on the whole it was quite good, but then there were random moments that I was like, really? But I suppose it is the 80s, so I've got to give them a bit of leeway. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good film.
Yeah. I guess we'll move right into your film then, which is Tell the Folks What It's All About, Girl.
Yeah, it's a 1976 film called Aces High. It's set during World War One in France. I'll just quickly find the IMDb synopsis-y thing. A naive young officer straight from school arrives on the Western Front to fight the air war, against the Germans. However, the life expectancy of green pilots is not very good. That's not a very good description at all. So basically this character, Crawford, arrives at this military base where he's going to be a pilot, and he has a grand total of 15 hours experience in the air. And it's about... his respect for the leader there, Gresham. He thinks he's, you know, God's gift to pilots, but in truth, he's a he's a drunk and a, well, not a coward, but he has to be blind drunk before he can get on a plane because he's absolutely bloody terrified, which is reasonable, in my opinion. And it's just sort of about how he develops as a pilot, how their relationship changes, because Gresham is also married to his sister, Crawford's sister, and obviously about the war and what it was like for soldiers basically sitting around waiting to die.
Yeah, this one for me was it was good, because you started open, and, you know, ever since I was a little boy, you know, I love... Every little boy wants to become a pilot. You can see it in this film right away. You know, I love a good dogfight. Not like, you know, two dogs in a ring, one dog enters, one dog leaves, you know, kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but dogfight in the flight sense. I love watching that on screen. You get a pretty great one right at the beginning of this film, which pretty much Tarantino's the whole film. It tells you what's going to happen at the end of the movie and the beginning of the movie. And then you have the whole lead up to that as the film progresses. And, yeah, the acting was great. The actors that I actually recognized from stuff, actually.
Oh, yeah. These are the ultimate sort of, not quite classic Hollywood, but, you know, really famous older generation of actors. We've got Malcolm McDowell, who's in every horror movie ever now, apparently. Obviously from Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. Christopher Plummer, Simon Ward, Peter Firth, John Gielgud, Trevor Howard. I think Ray Milland is in it. Richard Johnson, and I'm sure there was someone else I recognised, and I can't remember who it was now. Oh, well, anyway, yes, you've got you know, the absolute cream of the crop for that generation of actor. They're all in it. You will recognise a lot of people. They've got, you know, people from Dad's Army and all sorts of things in it. So, yeah, you will recognise faces.
Yeah. See, the problem with 1976 Malcolm McDowell is 1976 Malcolm McDowell, because he looks like he's about 17 years old in all these movies, you know?
I don't know why he was doing this weird, posh accent. Like, I mean, I appreciate, you know, in the 40s, people who made it to that sort of level of pilot probably were, you know, brought up well and things like that. And he's this weird, softly spoken guy, but he's actually born in Leeds, which is Yorkshire, so he's very... Well, he's, you know, a commoner like me. So it was very strange listening to him do this accent, especially since he now seems to just do his voice in everything. And obviously, you know, as you get older, your voice changes. Mm-hmm. And I'm so used to hearing Malcolm McDowell being Malcolm McDowell. Listening to him as Gresham was sort of unnerving.
Well, he's drunk all the time, so maybe that changed his voice in some kind of way.
That as well, yes.
I mean, so much to a point, like, hey, you're an alcoholic. You would like this flask as a gift. Here you go, alcoholic, you know.
And then there was, of course, Croft was the one that...
Was the young one that they came in.
Yeah, because there's a Croft and a Crawford, and I keep getting them mixed up. Croft was the one that came in. He's a big fan of Gresham. Crawford, my apologies, similar to Gresham, but he reacted to it in a different way, and he's just decided that he's not going to fly again ever.
Well, it's a lot of stress. Basically, they're the only line of defense between the French and the Turks. That's what it seems like to me. That, you know, once they get a call on the radio, they have to call to arms and just go up with their small flight crew and try to take down these baddies in with their cross planes. Which I was watching this, and I mentioned the Great Pumpkin earlier, because all I could think about was Snoopy versus the Red Baron, the Flying Ace, versus, you know, or whatever he was shooting down at the time. He was sitting atop of the doghouse. You know, it's all I thought about during those scenes. You know, because it took me back right to when I was a kid. You know, watching that, like, wow, this seems just like Peanuts, and, you know, it's been really wonderful. You know.
Yeah, I mean, they had a few scenes sort of in the HQ planning what the little people would be doing, and it was essentially just, you know, send such and such out that way to die and to hopefully do this, but probably to die. You know, it was just, you know, what a strange situation to be in, you know, knowing that every time you get into that seat, your chances of returning just get
slimmer and slimmer.
I don't know. Would they get slimmer? Because obviously the less experience you have, the more likely you are to die.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, the more experience you have, the more times you've been out there. being shot at.
Especially Croft, who had like 14 towers in the sky, and it really showed.
Exactly. Yeah, so you basically got no chance or no chance.
So if you go out there with that guy, there's a good chance he might get you killed, you know, by being a bad pilot and a bad shooter and a bad everything else, you know.
And even if you are the lone survivor, that's so much psychological damage. You know, watching everyone you know die around you and waiting in this horrible little room with, you know, a mashed up pool table and a piano and nothing else.
I love that pool table. It's like, yeah, we gotta learn how to play. Great. The felt is destroyed, so we gotta learn how to play without this felt being here.
Yeah. That was a good little moment where he's like, you haven't learned this table yet, have you?
Oh, but yeah, I like the relationship. Well, I don't like the relationship between Croft and Gresham because he's a little obsessive. Our Peter Firth there, who I know from Life Force, but there's no naked alien chick walking through this movie. I'm not saying it might have helped. No, because I kind of like this movie. It's pretty good. But I recognize Simon Ward because I watch anything that the Musketeers are involved in. And he played the Duke of Buckingham and the Oliver Reed, Michael York, Three Musketeers movie. And I've watched that a couple times because it's Musketeers, and I've watched everything, anything Musketeers was involved in. So I'm a big fan. Mm. I like basically the scene because it really broke down in this movie towards the end. Right, you were talking about we're gonna make plane noises through this whole show.
Oh my god!
He
starts
flying around for no reason with his arms waving out, and you know, like he's
oh gosh,
he just loses his mind, and you can really see the stress that these people have in this situation that they're thrown into, which is basically a no-win situation. You're gonna be defending us from these bloodthirsty Turks, and you know that's what you're gonna do. If you get shot down, whatever, you're all expendable, and you know. And, of course, the only one that survives is, you know, our main star. Because, you know, he's Malcolm fucking McDowell, you know, with his little boy's face, you know. And of course, he gets a whole new set of recruits at the end there, which is kind of like full circle, you know.
Yeah, and they have even less hours in the sky than Croft did.
Mm-hmm.
When they get there.
But yeah, the flight scenes were shot real well. There's not a point that we, well, except maybe the parts where, you know, Firth falls in love with the whore for some reason. I don't know what that's about, but you know.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
It's like, dude, she's a whore. She shags dudes for a living, you know.
I don't think he realized that, to be honest, but it was just a weird non-starter of a plot for me, you know. He goes back to see her, and then he sees her with someone else, and he just sort of forgets about it after that.
Like, oh, she's talking to somebody else. I'm going to move on.
Yeah, there's no reaction to it at all. He doesn't even go, oh, well, it just like cuts there and goes, well, that's enough of that storyline. Back to the planes. What? Oh, okay.
So that part was pretty worthless. If I had to pick a weak point of this movie, it was just the visit to the French whorehouse / bar, you know?
Oh, no, I quite like, I mean, that bit was naff, but I liked the scene where they were sort of all sat around with their respective whores having a good little time, and he was just, bless him, was just sat right at the back on his own, not in the circle of friends, just like, what do I do? That was so cute.
I don't like whores.
Oh. He didn't know they were whores, he just thought they were very friendly.
$5. No. No, I wouldn't say that, no. It's, yeah, the second part was pretty bad, but that first part was, yeah, they're just having a good time, like they are through most of this movie, you know, whether they're singing a jaunty tune around the piano with each other for no apparent reason, you know.
Oh, God, that was so painfully British, wasn't it? I cringed.
But that was always fun. I love a good drinking song. That's universal in the world, I think. They love a good drinking song.
Yeah, but it was the most pathetic drinking song ever. It was very proper and, you know, oh, what a jolly good time we're having. La, la, la. What is that? Oh, dear.
Anything else you want to say about it? I mean, I've been taking over this fucking show. What do you want to say about this movie?
I think that was sort of my main issue with it, was that the 70s were a strange time for British films. You know, a lot of them tried to sort of be more progressive and have as much nudity as possible in a sort of, we don't care about nudity, grow up, it's the modern age sort of way. And then this other half of films that clung to, you know, like Brief Encounter style, quaint British quietness, and I think this film sort of falls into that category more. And while I respect that in 40s movies and things, in 70s movies, it just seems kind of, I don't know, strange, like, clinging on to the past as desperately as possible. Although, on the flip side, you know, this just occurred to me now, it was set during World War One, so it's possible that was done on purpose to make it seem more old-fashioned.
Yeah, could be. You know, I don't analyze things too much, and maybe perhaps I should, but, you know, it's yeah, I can see what you're talking about.
Mm. But yeah, the you know, Johnny sing-song around the piano old chap was a bit crap. I was like, oh, please stop. No. Like, as a British person, I was out British just by watching this film.
See, in America, we have drunken karaoke. That's what our version of that is, you know?
Yeah, well, we do now. It was strange watching that. But on the whole, I found myself sort of quite distanced from it. I don't know what it was exactly. You know, I enjoyed the flight sequences and watching that part, but I didn't really connect to any of the characters.
Hmm. Okay, yeah.
And this is another film as well that has no women in, which is understandable. I mean, how many pilots in the 70s do you know that were women? But, yeah.
Well, none in World War One, so, you know.
Exactly.
I guess that's a... That's historically accurate, I guess you would call
it. Yeah, I'm not using it as a criticism of the film, because that's fair enough. But, yeah, it was another one of those films that's just entirely men that I didn't really relate to in any sense. So it was sort of watching it from a distance. As you know, I didn't feel like I was getting involved ever.
Yeah, I can see that.
The most connected to it, I felt, was when they were in that whorehouse and they were, you know, sat around drinking and laughing and having a good time. That felt so much more familiar to me and easier to, you know, connect with, I guess.
Well, yeah, just having a good time, you know.
So
hanging out
so
with whores.
Yeah, exactly. As you do. So yeah, it was kind of like, I think I liked it, but it feels like I watched it years ago already, because it was, you know, sort of watched through a screen of not being able to relate at all.
I understand.
If that makes sense. It's really hard to describe how I feel about it. It was very odd.
I mean, I had a whole discussion with Gil Rokitansky about how much he doesn't like Hot Fuzz very much, and he explained to me why, and it made a lot of sense, you know, and that was a thing, and that was a, shit, I don't know how many episodes ago for Cinema Beef, it was a long time ago, but yeah, that was an interesting conversation, just from a cultural standpoint, is why he didn't like it as much as he should have, and
I essentially live in Hot Fuzz, so...
Okay.
Like, the town that I live in is very similar to that one, so it's very easy for me to like that film.
Gotcha.
Because I go, oh god, I know that guy. What a dick.
Oh, but, yeah. Anything else you'd like to say about this movie at all?
No, I think that's about it. It did feel longer than it was, because it was, you know, it's a very slow burn. It's obviously not, you know, your typical Hollywood action movie. So if you're looking for, you know, all high octane explosions and gangbangs, then you're looking in the wrong place.
Oh boy, yeah. This for me, it's funny. There's a small connection to Lou Gossett Jr. in this movie. Whereas this movie is called Aces High, he was in the Iron Eagle sequel called Aces Iron Eagle 3. It's not really a connection, but there's a title. There's a title confliction. If you're looking for Aces and you're looking for Aces High, you're looking for Aces Iron Eagle 3, it might come up in the same search. You know, you don't know.
Also, there's a movie called Ace High, which is completely different. I believe it's about gambling.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, it's a stupid little thing I said there, but, you know, whatever. Lou Gossett Jr. rules, so you can all kiss
my ass. Yeah, because everything I say is completely sensible.
Well, you know, it's more sensible.
I was talking about shaving eyeballs.
Shit. Oh, but yeah, ratings now. What do you give a bird?
A six.
A six? Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah, I like it enough to watch it, and maybe you guys should too, because that's... Both these films are streaming on Netflix at the time of the recording, so they're accessible to you guys, for you guys to watch on American Netflix for sure. And Yeah, let us know what you think about them, because we both give them a 6, and it was a watch. You know, it's a long, it's almost 2 hours long, so that's the thing.
Mm.
And they kind of use a, that's one bad thing I forgot to mention, they use a bootleg Hogan's Heroes theme. If you watched Hogan Heroes in the 70s, it kind of has that kind of theme. It kind of sounds just like it, really. And that's a big negative for me, you know, the bootleg Hogan's Heroes theme, you know. That's about it for me for this one, and for the bird as well. And we'll come back and we'll close out the show and tell you what we're going to do next.
Hi, I'm Steven Seagal. That's right, Steven Seagal. And for the past 40 years, in between barbecue and oxen and roasting boar for my insatiable appetite, I never miss an episode of Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Hi, I'm Dr. Action.
Hi, and I'm the Kick-Ass Kid.
When I'm not watching action films, I'm usually polishing my gun while looking at a back.
And when I'm not watching action films, I'm normally outside with a harpoon killing puppies.
But usually you can find us both watching 80s, 90s action films. You could follow us on Twitter, Dr. Action Kick-Ass.
You can find us on our main page, which is dractionkickass.blogspot.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and TalkShoe.
Yes, every week we do a commentary on an 80s and 90s action classic, and where we can, we also provide the film so that you can watch along with it.
This podcast explodes.
Hey, where's that baby mama at? I gotta tase somebody.
This is Jamie from Devour the Podcast. Do you enjoy horror commentary with straightforward honesty?
Oh my God, fuck this movie. Fuck this movie so hard.
Oh my goodness, you know, halfway through this movie, I was just like, let's get this thing going.
Fuck this movie. Humor and an obvious passion for the genre.
Pick up the seat, I'll kick him in the face.
I like the cut of your jib.
The ceiling, Grandma. Don't make me get out the broom. Oh, your tears are like wine.
They used to call that the vapors.
Cupcakes are kind of the Schindler's List of desserts. It's a pure good. I love the idea of up-and-coming horror directors taking on the found footage genre. I really, really like that idea.
And that's really the worst thing you can commit as far as filmmaking is concerned, is making a film that's just average.
Well, that doesn't really inspire any kind of discussion, whether it's, you know, to rip it apart or praise it.
Then you should spend time with David and me.
And Bo.
As we discuss horror films from old classics.
Deep Red. Empire of the Ants. Lisa and the Devil. The Baby. The Toxic Avenger.
The New Favorites.
Absentia. Cabin in the Woods. The Loved Ones. Shadow of Death. VHS. The Woman.
Check us out on iTunes or at devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. Devour the Podcast is a proud member of the Horrorphilia Podcasting Network.
Just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. And we're proud to announce that this theater will soon bring you the greatest array of pictures ever to reach our screen. You'll see the finest stars in exciting performances. You'll thrill to the suspense, comedy, romance, and drama of world-famous stories. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
Ever wonder what chickens do when you're not looking?
Operation Cover Up!
No chicken escapes from Tweedy's farm!
You've got to get out of here.
I know our last escape attempt was a bit of a fiasco.
These chickens are planning a little getaway.
The plan is, we go over the wire.
That might work.
Now, they may have found their only hope.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You've been a wonderful audience. Ouch! The name's Rocky.
And what brings you to England?
Why, all the beautiful English chicks, of course.
Pushy Americans.
Hi, how are you?
overpaid, oversexed, and over here.
Which bunk is mine?
What is it?
It's a pie machine. Chickens go in, pies come out.
Ooh, what kind of pies?
We're all going to fly over that fence, and Mr. Rhodes is going to show us how.
Did you say fly?
This summer.
I don't want to be a pie.
I don't like gravy.
Rocky!
I'm coming!
From the Academy Award-winning creators of Wallace and Gromit.
Rocky!
I'll be down before you can say mixed vegetables!
Dare to dream.
There's a better place out there.
And get ready to fly.
The event of an emergency, put your head between your knees and
kiss your bum goodbye.
Chicken Run.
We mustn't panic. We mustn't panic.
Good morning, Mr. Stevenson! Brian!
No way! I parked it right over the right there!
Brian's been having one of those days.
Hey, I didn't do anything.
Mister. But he's about to have the night of his life.
Hey, Bob, the name's Maurice, and I'll catch you later. What goes on down there? Every kid's fantasy. It's magic. No teachers, no rules, no homework. And the best part is, you don't see any parents telling the kids what they can't eat. It's a veritable cornucopia. Don't you miss you?
Oh, this is an exclusively under-the-bed phenomenon.
We're the reason kids get locked in their rooms. We're the reason brothers hate their sisters. We're also the reason that parents send their kids back to camp.
First you let a kid in here, now you make hunchback jokes.
Can't you want to fly?
Bye-bye, Brian!
Looks like there's no way out!
Little Monsters. Fred Savage, Howie Mandel. They act up when the sun goes down. You ready?
Maurice, I was born ready.
Okay, Bird, that's it for episode 11. Tell the folks the theme for next episode, what we're going to be doing.
Next week is children's films, or more accurately, films we watched as kids. So obviously there'll be a slight difference in era, but, you know, not decades and decades. And I have chosen Chicken Run. It's a 2000 animated film from, is it Aardman? The people who did Wallace and Gromit, anyway. It's obviously about chickens. And it's a film that came out when I was 7. And I've watched it a lot. And I absolutely love it. Or I did then. I haven't watched it in a while. So I'm pretty sure I will again, though. So we'll be talking about that next week. And in contrast, the beard has chosen...
Little Monsters, from 1988, I think. It starred Fred Savage, Ben Savage, actually, as well, his little brother, probably his first appearance at anything. Daniel Stern's the dad, and Howie Mandel is Maurice, who is the main monster in this film. Basically about a boy, who played by Fred Savage, whose parents are having a difficult time with a divorce. So in turn, he learns that monsters actually live under his bed in their own secret world. And he joins Maurice to go into this world and go cause ruckus in children's homes at night, you know, causing pranks. And slowly he starts to become a monster himself. And, you know, what will he do? You know, we'll see when you watch this very morbid children's film from my childhood, which has no business, which most children now should have no business watching this film. It's very, it's not animated in the traditional sense, but it's very, very animated in the, you know, in the literal sense. Every character is insane. But we'll talk about that next week. I'm going to do our children's film show. Anything you want to push at all, girl?
Today, I think it came out, the 14th. The Terror Troop new episode came out featuring me and Bus Butcher with our exclusive interview with Nicole Alonso and Oklahoma Ward, talking about their film Crawl or Die, which is a film I... mentioned last episode, or possibly the episode before, forgotten already. But yeah, we talk about that a little bit more. So if you are interested in hearing more about the film, especially from, you know, the makers, please do go find that episode. It is the Terror Troop episode where the main film is Bugs, which was a listener's choice.
That was
so,
fun movie too.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was fun.
I haven't seen it. Cool. So yeah, go check that out. And I think that's it, really. I don't know why I keep, like, clicking.
Nervous tick, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I whore myself often. Cinema Beef is still rolling on. I recorded a show tonight, actually, with the Phantom Eric, where we're doing a Slater on Slater episode, where we're doing The Legend of Billie Jean, starring Helen Slater and Christian Slater as well. But that's where we're doing a solo Christian Slater film as well, called Pump Up the Volume, which is a pretty good film, but it's pretty much where podcasting started from. If you watch that film and you watch Pump Up the Volume and you look at what we're doing now, it's pretty much the same thing. Pirates on the radio, talking mess and political and whatever else you talk about, you know, and that should be a lot of fun. And I have a brand new project coming up with him where we're doing exclusively on the Horrorphilia Network, where we're going to talk about just sequels. We're doing a sequel to show. And we're going to expand on that, actually. We get more and more talking about it, and because of more and more reality, we record the first weekend of October, though, for sure, the episode one of that untitled show. Two Drink Minimum commentaries keeps rolling on. I mentioned earlier the films we're doing for that show. If you'd like to be on the show, it's usually a freaking hoot, especially when we have a Scott or a Swede on the show, because those people are freaking insane, you know, and they... They definitely bring something to the table, and it makes me laugh every time. And we just have a good time. You don't need no insights on the film, just to watch the film. And if you've seen the film, you want to say something about the film, go ahead. But it's going to be a lot of dick and fart jokes, I'm warning you right now. Because who doesn't love a lot of good dick and fart jokes? I'm on the Terror Troop as well. Listen to it, terrortroop.com. Usually I put the link on this particular blog, so you can click on it and find it pretty easily. Because Boss Butcher works hard to put a show out. I don't work very hard to put a show out. And, you know, it shows. Quality control. No.
Hey.
No. No, you're good. I'm terrible. You know, that's all there is to it, you know.
Oh, that's not true at all. You're fabulous, darling.
Okay.
My little podcast spider friend agrees.
Beautiful.
You remember a few episodes ago, I was like, oh, hey, a spider.
Yeah, spider. Yeah, I remember the spider
that
story.
That spider has been out every time we've recorded. It's come to visit me.
Beautiful.
I know. It's a beautiful friendship.
Beautiful friendship, yes, indeed. Till he bites down and you become radioactive, Emily, and then you know.
Oh, that would be cool.
I think you start deteriorating like Jeff Goldblum, and that'd be bad, you know.
Well, radioactive, I was assuming, you know, Spider-Man.
No, but
it can go
either way, though, that's all I'm saying, you know.
That's true.
You don't want to go that way.
No, I don't want to keep my penis in a jar. What? I'm serious. If you watch The Fly, he opens his little bathroom cabinet thing and his dick is in a jar.
I remember, yes, very vividly. But, yeah, find me on Twitter, GW. Come like the Bird of the Beard Facebook group, I mean Facebook page, and we'd appreciate it. And please rate and review us on iTunes. If you rate and review that show, the Bird of the Beard, the one you're listening to right now, Cinema Beef Podcast, Two Drink Minimum Commentaries, or Sausage Fest Reviews, you can win a fabulous prize from yours truly. And one of four things, actually, which include a couple autographs, a Region 1 Blu-ray, so I probably want to go to an American. You probably wouldn't pick that one. And a vintage card set from the 80s of a movie that I probably disclosed. I think it was it's a Dark Crystal movie card set, a vintage one. And you guys can win one of those four prizes. And yeah, for doing nothing, just logging into iTunes and say, hey, lovely show. 1 star. No, don't give me 1 star. I wouldn't be hurt my feelings. You know, give us like 3 stars if you need to. You know, whatever makes you feel good. But yeah, don't take much to do. You guys can win something cool. And I wouldn't mind shipping internationally. So any international listeners right now listening, you guys can win those prizes too. I'll post them to the Bird and the Beard group page. I'll do that. And you guys can see what they are in case I didn't post them there before. And we'll go with that. And that's my piece pretty much. And I guess we'll see you guys all again next time around for episode 12 of The Bird and the Beard.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.